When my guest on the Dan Nicholls Show this week becomes apparent, you would probably imagine I would introduce him as one of South Africa's most exciting global comedy talents, or one of the most natural thespians that we've produced over the last 20, 30, arguably 40 years, maybe one of the most all-round exciting entertainers South Africa lay claim to. But no, none of those whatsoever. Because, God was saying that the only reason I have you on this particular show, other than for filling in for the former Prince Andrew on short notice, is that you might be, I think, the most promising young lawn bowls talent we have in South Africa. And so I welcome you to the Dan Nicholls Show.
Thanks,
as
Dad.
Somebody who's about 60 years below the age. You're kind of like a youth development lawn bowls player. But I was watching some clips the other day and just loving yet another crazy offbeat element of the life of Skulk Bazaidnout that you've discovered and absolutely love.
It's perfectly authentic. It's the same as like when I started with the jerseys, wearing them, people would often like come and ask me, So what do you really wear? Like, surely those jerseys are too ugly for you to wear. It's all a gimmick. It's all a... And I'm like, that's my clothes.
Well, look,
that's my wardrobe.
You did arrive in the studio in a beige safari suit, which you changed out of as soon as you saw cameras.
No, but just people go like, people often want to know, is it all an act? You know, that like this shirt, for example, is it like when you think you're going to... Or when you know you're going to appear in public, or then do you wear? And then I'm like, yes, this is my wardrobe. I like funky things. And the same with the lawn bowls. Even my ex-partner was at some point, she said to me, do you really enjoy it? Is it just so you can post on Instagram now and then and you know people think it's funny? And I'm like, no. What happened was my parents started playing lawn bowls because they retired. I went and played one day. The first time, I will admit, was for shits and giggles, and I thought I can get some great Instagram content. And I fell in love with it, and also I was pretty good.
Even
so, it's the only ball sport I've only been good at, ever been good at. So,
but even an actor of your caliber, and we'll get to this acting caliber in a moment, but you'd only be able to sustain that riff for so long if it actually was a riff. And it comes down to whether it is the acting work you do, the comedy work you do, anything I've ever had the pleasure of either doing with you or more often watching on admiringly, has been built on that platform of authenticity. And I think that is what has driven you to this ridiculous success you've had, is that I can say very honestly, as someone who has been able to reach out and touch you and then not wash my hands for weeks, the Skulk Bazaidnout that you meet hanging out at a bar or playing lawn bowls or sitting backstage is exactly the same Skulk that you see on stage. And that's quite a rarity. You've managed to retain. You are exactly who you are all the way through. And I love that.
I really try to, because I like for people, when they see me live, I like for them to know that it's not an act. I am giving you the person, like, for example, now with my new show, Hey, Hey, Dibosse, you know, I'm opening up about a very painful thing in my life, talking about my divorce. And it's just my way of also saying to the audience, hey, you guys make the effort of coming to the show, so I'm gonna really let you in to my life, because the audience is already such a big part of my life. I see the audience as a concept. Obviously, it's not the same audience every show. But I see an audience in front of me more often than I see my friends, my partner, my parents. The audience is who I spend, the audience as like almost a character, if you want to put it that way, is who I spend most of my time with. So I really have a lot of love, respect, and admiration for my audience, because I'm like, you guys are most of my year. You guys are most of my nights. I'm spending my night with you guys. Another thing I wanted to say about the lawn bowls is that it's just really amazing to be part of a club. I really now get clubs. Like when people, especially when men are part of clubs, they people, you know, all ladies like have bridge club or book club or poker club or whatever. Just so amazing to be part of a club, because most of my life, as a comedian is like I'm on the road by myself. And just to have like that community to be able to go to, and you know, our club plays 6 times a week. So when I'm home, I can almost every day of the week go and be part of a group that, you know, the club is bigger than anyone there. And yeah, it's just nice to also just be part of a club. And I don't really know what other sport I could do. Maybe tennis, which I'm not great at.
I think you've found your space.
I found my space. And I at least with bowls, I can play competitively. I can really play well.
So as I'm executive producing, directing, and having a small cameo in this movie, this is the cool runnings of Lawn Bowls, where you can actually play yourself in it as Scott Bazenat starts out as this. Because basically in Lawn Bowls, what are you, kind of early 40s now or thereabouts?
Yeah. I'm 33.
There we go. So there, early 40s. I did know that. So here you are, by the time we have the film going anyway. But you've basically, at 33, you're a child prodigy in bowls terms.
Pretty much.
And yet, here we go, the Olympic Games in 20, what would the next one be? Say 2032. And here's Scott Bazenat leading South Africa to a famous gold medal.
Well, actually, bowls, sadly, not at the Olympics. It's only at the...
Oh, it was the Commonwealth Games, wasn't it?
Commonwealth Games.
There's a meaningful competition. Yeah. We'll get you into it.
Please. Yeah, I'd love to. I'd love to play there on that level one day.
You mentioned the upcoming tour, and you mentioned the space coming through. And I watched that about, we know each other reasonably well, but it's not like we're on the phone every day, mostly because you don't answer. But when I look at the time you've been through, you've been through something that for anybody is going to be really difficult. Any sort of breakup of that level is not easy. You are on the cover of Heeskenoot every third week. You're just a guaranteed bestseller. You are a household name in South Africa. You are so many people's favorite entertainer, which most of the time is fantastic. You've got this great big fan base and you sell out shows, and that's terrific. But when you go through something that's so personal and so intimate and so painful, and the whole world knows about it and is watching, I'd imagine that takes it to another level of having to deal with that.
Yeah, especially because, you know, when I'm in a relationship, I like sharing my relationship on social media, because it's a, you share on socials what you are proud of. And normally I'm very proud of the person I'm with, the person I'm dating or married to or whatever. My wedding was something that makes you so happy. Of course you'd want to share it with the world and put it out there and be like, look how beautiful my wedding was. Look what a special day it was. Look at my cool suit.
You'd be strange not to.
Yeah, like how most people. And then when it ended, I kind of realized, which you, I guess, kind of subconsciously realized, but also not really. You realize, oh, okay, because the start and the blossoming of the relationship was so public, that by default means that the end of it is also going to be public, in a way even more public, because, you know, the nature of humankind is we love a scandal.
We've watched 7 episodes of the series. This is number 8. It's the finale we want to watch. It's the soap opera that you weren't really wanting to have.
And even though my divorce had no scandalous reason, there was no affair or anything like that.
I had heard rumors linking you to Malt Sierhagen. And I'd really like to put that out there.
Those are just rumors, and those pictures are deep fakes. But you kind of realize, okay, well, you know, people, a breakup is a scandal in its own way, because people just like, oh my word, it's here, they've broken up, it's ended. It's hard, you know, because you're on there. Phone screens while they're taking a shit for that. You're sharing intimate moments with people, and people say that to me, especially men. They'll go, every morning I take my shit and I watch you and I laugh at your stuff. And I'm like, you could have.
That's what I've always dreamt.
That was my dream. But
take a selfie and post.
Normally with
time.
Men, they'll tell me in the morning with my morning shit, I watch you. And with women, they'll go, I'm lying in bed. Morning, having a cup of tea or coffee, I watch you. But anyway, you like.
I find my wife is in the bath with a glass of wine watching you, and that's when our argument starts.
That's where I wanted.
It's done nothing for my relationship, but she's very happy with it.
But because people feel so comfortable with you because they see you all the time, I would have, especially at the beginning, people just cornering me after a show or whatever, and then just going, "What happened?" I'm like, I'm not even at a point where I'm like really telling my friends what happened. I'm not just going to tell a stranger. But
it is that element of movie and television where, now, of course, I know Skulk. I've watched all his shows.
Yeah.
They have that intimacy that's not real, but it feels like it is.
Yeah, and I guess because I'm a comedian, people don't see comedians often, even though we're the people that often experience the most sadness, like Robin Williams, for example. But people don't often see us as people who feel a lot of hurt and sadness. So people feel comfortable just to go like, so what happened? You know, you guys looked so happy. You go, I'm still
so glad you asked.
I'm still trying to kind of also process in my weekly therapy session what exactly happened. But the same way that it was difficult for it being a bit public, what was also amazing is that the way that my audience, who I spoke about earlier, were also just there for me. I had so many experiences. So this happened in, you know, it ended in September 2024, and on the 6th of September, then the 13th of September, literally a week later, I went on a month and a half tour, 2 weeks in Europe and 4 weeks in the UK. And at that point, I only made it public once I got back from that tour. So now I'm on tour, I'm overseas. No one knows about it at this point. My closest friends and my parents are all only people who know about it. And I still wore my wedding ring on stage during the shows because I didn't want people to go away. Why is he not wearing his wedding ring? So I wore it on stage, and I would go for drinks with people afterwards. And it was so funny if I think about it in retrospect, because as we're walking to the bar, I can see the excitement in their faces of them going, yes, the comedian who we watched tonight is coming for drinks with us. We're going to get our own little
private comedy show.
Comedy show at the bar, you know, in which we didn't even pay for. And then we'd get there, they'll be like, so Skulk, how are you? And at that point, I just feel like I needed to talk about it or just tell people. And it almost made it easier telling strangers because you don't know them and chances are you're probably never going to see them again. And so often we'd be having drinks and I'd be like, well, actually, if you really want to know who I am, or how I am, my wife left me 3 weeks ago. And I could see their faces going like, just ordered.
Is this a joke?
And you could see them going like, if we knew this, we wouldn't have invited him for a drink because we really don't want to sit and listen to this. But they were just so gracious in letting me just sit there. And, you know, some nights, as hectic as it sounds, just kind of like be sad.
There's a great movie that came out recently, Will Arnett playing the character inspired by John Bishop, the Liverpoolian comedian, who you can normally understand on the third or fourth time of watching the same piece. Brilliant comedian. And he got into comedy because, very similarly, his wife were separating and he needed something and he fell into comedy. And you mentioned earlier using your audience soundboard, this new upcoming tour. It's a very unique form of therapy that very few people will get the chance to experience. But you have exactly this. You've got 500, 1,000, I think when you play Wembley, it'll be 40 or 50,000 devoted fans who give you this chance to work through something in a way that also means so much to you as a comedian.
Yeah, and, you know, with musicians, it's not a weird thing at all for a musician to go through a breakup and write at least one song.
Three albums.
Or an album, or three.
If you're country and Western.
About the breakup. Fine artists as well, like Frida Kahlo, turned so much of her pain and trauma and breakups all into art. So, you know, at the end of the day, I'm like, me doing a show called Hey Hey, Devil Say is not that different to Taylor Swift writing a breakup album.
And look, that Taylor Swift Skulk Bazaar parallel is one the critics have been making for some time now. So So I think it's apps that you bring.
Man, I love you and hate you so much at the same time.
I'll tell you what, before I continue, we've got some beautiful glasses that you've actually bought in yourself. I think these were your great-grandmother left them to you.
No offense to the podcast studio, but these glasses are hideous. I actually can't believe we're having my delicious wine out of these hideous wines.
I thought they were perfect for this wine.
This is like a tiny wine glass. This is like a proper
Afrikaans. You are the tiny pinner.
Great tiny wine glass.
And I cannot think of a better man to be drinking out of them. We are, if you're a fan of wine, this is Skulk's own wine. We'll talk about it a little bit more at the end of the show, but Skulk will be coming up on Dan Really Likes Wine, discussing this wine.
Skulk really likes wine.
Indeed. Arguably more. It is your pinners. I say cheers to you and cheers to, there we go, a fellow alumni of mine, because to very different degrees, we went through a similar academic space in that we both studied drama at UCT, but I managed 1 year where my inability to play a tree suffering through depression was not up to the requisite standards. So I went off and did wine roosting and got a BA in English instead, whereas you saw the whole
thing. But you actually got to study wine.
No, well, unofficially. I have since.
Oh.
But no, in my day, long before yours, you just rocked up at wine farms, got free wine, and that was basically your studying for a BA for 3 years at UCT, which worked really nicely. But you went through that whole piece. And if I think of all the work I've seen of yours and the many times I've seen you on stage and doing events, probably the piece that always strikes the chord with me most was a film you made, and you would be hard stretched to call it a comedy. It had some more lighthearted moments. But I think I actually remember messaging you. It was Morphe, where you
played.
Morphe
was the other gay army movie.
And
they came out after us.
It was Gunnar. Listening of great work you've done. But I just remember watching this and thinking, for so many people, often like Rob Van Furen or Alan Committee, yeah. These are people who so many have only seen in the comedy space.
Even Riyad Musa.
Musa.
It was Long Walk to Freedom. He played Katrada.
Don't talk about him, though, because he promised me a role in Material 7, and it still hasn't materialized. So he and Jay Razdeen are on the blacklist completely for the show. But no, he's another great example. And I think one of the aspects of who Skulk is that I would imagine, and this is me imposing myself into your thought process, gives you the most reward, is how you're able to jump to such different spaces and do so not just with great skill and great ability and great success, but also what seems to be so much personal reward.
Yeah, I mean, the acting stuff, I like showing that side of me just because comedy has always dominated my career, but acting was always my first love, and it definitely dominated my youth in terms of, you know, what I always saw myself, where I saw myself ending up. And comedy happened almost, I don't want to say by accident, but I started it more as a hobby. And when I started it, I always thought I'll definitely be an actor who now and then does some stand-up, but it ended up being other way around. It's just nice to, as a comedian, to surprise people a bit. And I think people who've done it well is Jim Carrey, Steve Carell, you know, international examples. But yeah, Rob Van Furen as well is where you do a project, people come to it with a certain expectation because they know Skulk the comedian, and then you just completely knock their socks off in a different way. And I know there's still lots of people who haven't watched Canary, and I urge you to watch it.
Please do.
I think it's still on Showmax, but
I will go,
it's something I'm very proud of.
I'll go as far as saying I'd put it in my top five all-time South African movies. Granted, I haven't watched all of them, yeah, it's you and Four Leon Schusters.
Christian Olwagen, who directed, would die if he had that.
Please pass it on. It's an outstanding movie, and I absolutely loved watching it. And you know, to your point, we often pigeonhole. I mean, it's hard to imagine Daniel Day-Lewis making a National Lampoon's movie, just as having Pauly Shaw in Hamlet is something you're going to struggle to get your head around. And yet there are people amongst you who can transition between these two very different spaces. But I feel that there's a seam of something very similar between them, because it is performance and it is understanding your stage and your craft. And although you're delivering a very different style, I think what sits behind both of them is very similar.
Yeah, and I think Robin Williams said that comedians, the thing is that comedians know what it's like to feel sad, so we want to make people laugh. We have this desire to make people laugh so much because we don't want them to feel the same way. But if you understand what makes people laugh, you definitely also understand what makes them sad, because the two go actually, if you think about it, hand in hand, laughter and sadness, they're so close to each other. In my new show as well, more than I've done in any other show, there's moments of sadness where I kind of stop the punchlines for a while and just kind of sit down and say to the audience, you know, obviously I'm joking about divorce and whatever and what I went through, but you know, this is the realities, or you know, I talk them through the events, which I think is also a nice balance between understanding that I'm obviously talking about it in a humorous way because that's my job, but also kind of letting the sadness of it sink in.
Which is such a powerful combination, and
yeah,
it means that the literally hundreds of thousands of people who watched one too many episodes of Carte Blanche and are now living in Perth or Auckland or Sydney as South Africans abroad have got even more than usual to look forward to. But I say that in jest, because what you've done that I really admire is gone beyond just let's find a pocket of South Africans who are now living in North Auckland or living in Cottesloe or living in Toronto. And you have developed this audience that goes well beyond just, here's a nice touch point to home. And that must be something that gives you a huge amount of pleasure, because be it around the UK or Australasia, across Europe, you now have an audience that just transcends just homesick South Africans.
Yeah, I mean, my overseas audiences are still majority South Africans, I would say. But I like to think that with every year, the balance becomes more equal between South Africans and foreigners actually coming to the shows. And one of the biggest compliments for me when I'm in Australia, because I also do a lot of the gala shows, the Sydney Comedy Festival galas, Melbourne Comedy Festival gala and stuff, is when people then see me afterwards and go, you are our favorite on tonight, because I was the only South African out of, you know, maybe 10, 12 acts, and most of them were either Kiwis or Australians. So that makes me feel great, because then I'm like, that proves that it's not just people laugh at me because I'm South African and I'm saying South African things which are making them laugh. I can actually, audiences that are completely Aussie, make them laugh the same, if not more, than an Aussie comedian, which I think for any comedian, that's the level you want to be. You just want to be funny. You don't want to be funny for a South African or funny to South Africans. You just want to be funny. And I want any South African to at any time bring anyone to one of my shows and be able to tell them with confidence,
you're going to have a great time.
You're going to have a great time. Doesn't matter if you're British or Chinese or whatever, if you can understand English, you can come to the show.
And even if you don't, I mean, I really think if you're doing your job properly, you should be able to transcend simple language.
Not slipping on banana peels, Dan.
If I'm doing an event in New York, I will look ahead and I think, right, in South Africa, I might have a wry dig at the Sharks because they've just lost 3 or 4 games in a row. Right, what's my local club? Okay, the Mets have just lost 9 games in a row. Is there that element of, okay, well, I'm going to be in Auckland next week, this is the research I need to do. Who is my politician character of fun? Which is my suburb to take the mickey out of? Is that part of the research process, the making sure that even though you are the South African on tour, you're still finding those touch points, be the audience, South Africans abroad or else and out locals?
With me, not really, because there'll be now and then where I have something in my show where I reference, let's say, Kempton Park, and I say Kempton Park.
I mean, that's global. Let's go to somewhere they might not have heard of.
I'll say, like, full context, Kempton Park is like, and then I'll find out what is their Kempton Park version in Wellington or wherever, or in New Zealand, what is like the rough area that people can relate to. But my shows have always been like very personal stories, and this show I'm touring now more than ever. So in this show, there's almost, it is a themed show in terms of like my divorce. So there's almost no space to talk about what's happening in your country and politicians. It's letting you into my life, which I think the beauty of it is that it just works anyway, because divorce, well, the theme of divorce, love, heartbreak is so universal. It really doesn't matter where in the world I perform it. I've done some new material nights of the show, and I think the thing I'm the most proud of is that because of those a bit more sad moments, it creates a more nuanced comedy experience. Because if I think of Edinburgh Fringe Festival and the shows that have stood out to me that I really, really remember are the shows where at some point I was crying from laughing, and then 10 minutes later I was crying from something being touching or sad. And I think if you can achieve both in 1 hour and a half show, that's the sweet spot.
So not to give anything away, but in the upcoming show, not only is there Skulk's divorce, his puppy dies, his car gets repossessed.
And the Titanic sinks.
And his grandmother's arrested. again, I echo the comment I made at the start, whereby that authenticity and that very, very personal touch, which you sense straight away, this is absolutely Skulk. It drives it and drives it so well.
I feel I owe it to the audience in a way, because people make so much.
Because I paid a fortune to come and see you.
And well, yeah, if they are paying in rands, it's a fortune. Well, with what they're earning, that's fine. But just, you know, like you do a show in Wellington, and obviously that's Wellington City. The same way that if you do a show in Cape Town, so many people don't live in the City Bowl. So people are driving from Stellenbosch. People are driving from Durbanville. You know, so I do show in Wellington. People will be like, we live 2 hours out of Wellington. This was just the closest place we could see you. And I'm like, are you driving 2 hours back now? And some people are like, yeah, we're getting in the car now. Then at that point, it's already 9 p.m. They're driving 2 hours back. Sometimes people sleep over. They go, no, we came. We booked a hotel for the night. Then for me, that's something I'm still not used to, is that the fact that people make that much effort for me, that they would not only spend money on my show, but drive 2-3 hours, spend more money on a hotel, sleep over, drive 2-3 hours back just to come see my show. I mean, that for me is insane. So then I'm like, if you make that kind of effort to come watch me, I really feel I need to pour my heart and soul out to you guys.
You do remember, of course, though, that this is New Zealand, so it is a country that has neither television nor a Rugby World Cup. So you are providing much-needed entertainment and distraction. Sean Fitzpatrick, if you're listening, I'll see you in London in a couple of weeks. Before we wrap up, because there are 8 of your agents glaring at me from across the room in both English and Afrikaans, I did mention that we had the wine, and we are going to be talking about this on an upcoming episode of Dan Really Likes Wine, which I'm really excited about. You found your passion in acting and stage and your craft. I found my passion in drinking very expensive wine and getting other people to pay for it. It's a really fun project, and it's certainly not the first wine I've had that is attached to a celebrity, although few of them are quite as big as you, but the difference is that with quite a few, you won't mention any names, but quite a few, it's bang a name on the label, and that's kind of where it ends, other than, well, I want my 10 cases to take home and drink. The fun that you have with this, it's clearly been a project that, much like the bowls, much like the jumpers, there's nothing made up about it. You're actually really enjoying this.
Yeah, I mean, I've always loved red wine, and it got to a point where, I guess just from drinking a lot of it, where your palate eventually develops and you can realize like, oh, wow, I can actually taste the difference between a 50 Rand bottle and a 150 Rand bottle and a 800 Rand bottle. And I've always wanted my own red wine. And this guy makes this thing, some wine during COVID, it didn't get to me. And then as soon as we went to level 4, I get an SMS from Postnet saying there's a package for you. And I go pick it up and I realize it's a case of wine. And at that point, wine was alcohol was still illegal. And I realized, oh, it's because he sent it. And then it was locked down and then it got stuck at a depot somewhere. So I'm like, put it in my car. I was at least living close to the Postnet, like drove it home. And then I had the wine. It was so delicious. And I phoned the number on the Weibull because I was like, I need to thank this guy personally for sending this. I can't just send him an Instagram DM and be like shot for the wine. I phoned him and I was like, dude, this is some of the best wine I've ever had. They actually also make the first 11 Pfaff's wine.
Mr. Weinand.
And yeah, Weinand. And how funny is that his name is Weinand and he makes Wein. And I said to him, this is some of the best wine I've ever had. And just ask him more about like the different wines he makes. And at the end of the conversation, I said to him, you know, I've always wanted my own red wine, but my dream was always to have a Bayer's Kloof, like Bayer's Kloof, Skulk, Side Note, a collab. I was like, but that's so huge. Like, even if you send an email, they don't answer. It's just so hard with these big wine farms to actually get in there. And he said, I'll just make your wine. It's actually quite simple, you know. Make a batch until you're happy with it and you slap the label on it and let's go. And he sent it to me through Postnet again, that it was just a label-less bottle. And the first batch he made, I'll say it straight, it was terrible. Oh, well, just not my taste.
Yeah.
It was very light, very fruity, very Pinot Noir. I said to him, no, I want
something chunkier,
serious red wine. I want like the Bolognese of red wine. And I think because I don't speak his language, I can't speak in terms of tannins and body, and I don't know that language. So I just said to him, like, I think 3 or 4 of my favorite red wines. And he said, I think I know what you're after. Send me another one. I was happy with it. And now we're on batch number 5. And the thing I said to him is like, the most important thing for me is I need to put out a wine that I think is delicious as well. It doesn't matter how much money we make from it. I want people, if they ask me, is your wine any good? Because I'm about to spend money on this. I want to be able to confidently be like, yes, it will be money well spent.
Well, if you do want to know more about it, coming up in about 6 to 8 weeks, you can catch Skulk Zaynut on Dan Really Likes Wine, where Skulk talks in some depth about the choice of oak used in making this, the nature of the soils that the vines were grown in. But no, it gives us a great insight into his wine, which I will raise another toast to you for, Skulk, because
thanks.
With these fine imported wine glasses of ours, it's great what you can get for 8 Rand on Temu. Just to raise a glass, because you have been through quite a lot over the last while. You've retained the sense
love,
of humor.
New love.
We haven't even talked about the new partner who, and I saw she arrived from Eastern Europe. And it's a great website. A few friends of mine have used it, a lot of them a lot older than you. But I believe her English is coming along nicely. You weren't sure.
Well, she is Afrikaans, so English is slowly coming along.
You weren't sure of her surname yet, but you were hoping to get there soon. Look, have an absolutely wonderful tour. Keep lighting up the lives of other people. I hope it proves as therapeutic as I'm sure it will. But also, when that bounces back and the next movie comes up and the next tour, whenever I watch them, it is with a great deal of joy and with pride. Because you add such a rich dimension to our tapestry of entertainment here in South Africa, and you do so all over the world. So South Africa is rightly proud of you, and I shall watch the ensuing adventures.
And can I say one more thing?
You may end it.
Anyone who is Afrikaans or has a good understanding of Afrikaans, we only the first 3 episodes on Showmax now, but we just
released
Ikantour.
where you just mentioned South Africa so many times, which is our South African take on
The Office.
The Office. And what I'm really proud of with that show, and I'm punting it hard because I'm also one of the writers, is I do feel we managed to keep the essence of what makes The Office The Office, the risk-taking, the un-PC-ness, the gasp moments. But at the same time, we've created a brand new original show. So if you're a fan of The Office, I would really suggest checking out Deacon Tour on Showmax.
So I leave you then with a request, because you are a writer. I think you're a quiet executive producer as well. You play in those sorts of financial realms.
I wish.
I've got, and I know you already hold me in very high esteem, and you've struggled to look me in the eye through the course of the show, which is a throw to the gulf between us and celebrity. I have been, in amongst other things, a Kurt Darren music video playing the conductor in Sturmtrain. It was admittedly a 6-second role, but a very powerful and evocative 6 seconds. And I still haven't forgiven, as you know, the team at Material for not including me. When you need a kind of coma victim on bench or something that requires equally electric acting talent, a cameo appearance in an Afrikaans comedy show for someone who has 11 words of Afrikaans would give me an enormous amount of satisfaction.
Have a practice round. Look into camera. That's all you need to do in The Office is just look into camera.
That's slightly, so somewhere between surprised and I've just had Botox.
Yeah, it's more just like, yeah.
All right.
All day.
We've got you on camera. I'm holding you to this. Dan Nickel.
Okay.
Indicant.
Deal, Dad.
All right. Safe travels.
Thank you.
Skulk. Thank you. If you're in Australia or New Zealand or in the UK or Europe or Tahiti or Central America or particularly Venezuela over the next little while, look out for Skulk Bazenard. His latest world tour is all but sold out. And why not? Because he is a quite extraordinary South African talent. Cheers.
Bye.